now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Lucy Potter. Today on the show, tell me.
What's it like being HIV positive in the circus? Well, we'll be speaking to Sadiq Ali. And quiz stories.
Vicky Lane is live in the studio to tell us more.
All that and more today right here on Shout Out.
No.
Wow.
We're all too old.
Yeah.
You all turned and looked at me.
I know, yeah. And you gestured to me. I'm like, no.
Oh, man.
That's poor.
Yeah.
Poor.
It's been a while since we've had so few in the studio. And there's four of us, right? So, hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. And how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
So, are you all set for Christmas?
Well, I got a lovely Christmas card from this lovely couple I know called Andy and Carl, who wish me a very Merry Christmas. So, yeah, that's it. We must be getting close to Christmas. Yeah, yes. We're getting the Christmas cards.
Yes. Yeah. You got Christmas cards too?
I have, Mr. Shilton. Yes. Did you want me to count them?
No.
Okay.
I only gave you one.
Steffi,
what are you
it's like
about?
You're standing in the witness box or something. I have, right. Mr. Shilton. Yes. Okay, very serious. Yes. And what about the decorations? What's the situation with that?
Well, the decks went up on the first.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Mini Disney Magic Kingdom castle.
Wow. Jobby, wow, really?
You can see said.
Okay.
With a roundabout. goes round.
Okay.
It's got a Christmas tree that goes round and a Ferris wheel that goes round.
Sure you weren't just drinking and looking at it?
Actually, it's very flashy. It looks as though, I mean, you could hallucinate on the amount of flashing lights that are going on that part.
I've now got a picture of Steffi with her mulled wine just gazing at her.
Do you know I haven't had any mulled wine yet?
A crime, an actual crime is being committed right now.
Have you got your decks up then? Have you got your tree up?
No. Sorry, we're a late decorations.
You're not one of these like 12 days before time.
I guess we should
12 days before.
Yeah, I guess we're a. Oh, I guess we should put our decorations up. Kind of a household. Yeah,
are you a bar humbug?
No. Well, no. So my wife loves Christmas. She loves Christmas presents specifically. She very much likes getting them, and she likes receiving them even more. So she does take
getting them and receiving.
She takes them. She takes presents very very.
When you say getting, you mean she goes to get them, I suppose.
She likes receiving. Oh, yeah, she likes giving them. Sorry. Oh, yeah. No. She likes getting presents, receiving presents, having presents, and opening presents. Yeah, she likes all of those. But she also likes buying presents for other people. Oh. So she does take. She takes the act of gift exchange very seriously.
Yeah.
So there
as
has
in
been
going to shops or sitting there like on an Amazon or other.
A mixture of both. So we don't really do. We try to avoid Amazon. Other online delivery stores are available. But yes.
There was a time when everyone said Etsy, and even that's now diminished.
Yeah, no, even Etsy's gone down. Yeah, no, that used to be pretty reliable. Yeah. So yeah, no, that's our it's all about the presents, and the decorations will follow when we've sorted the presents.
And you got your haggis ready.
Haggis?
Christmas haggis?
Yeah. I've got the call ready. Hand out.
Okay, we found Tara's Christmas level then. Okay.
Oh dear. So, anyway, you had a lovely chat with a certain guy about a certain theatre.
Yes, he'd been on the show before. So we knew he was great at circus stuff. But this is his latest theatre show for HIV. You know when things happen around the world that are very much against the LGBTQ community and people put their heads above the parapets and push back? Sadiq Ali is one of those people with a new show pushing back against the stigma of HIV. Now, before we get into it, Sadiq, tell us about your background because it is wonderful under a circus tent.
Sure. Hi. Thanks for having me. Again, I've been on this show before, actually, when I brought a show to Edinburgh Fringe, and I'm back working on a new one. It's a show called Tell Me. And I started my circus journey in London. I went to London's National Centre for Circus Arts, and I trained in circus and found a love of dance, theatre, non-verbal physical storytelling. And I really use this to highlight queer narratives performance. I think because there's things I need to say, things I need to do, a little bit of activism within a lot of my work, and I don't always have the words for that. So dance and theatre and performance has become my route in doing so. My background in circus and physical training was also at the same time I was diagnosed with HIV. So it was in 2014, and I would have been in my first year at university. And at that time, I really noticed people distance themselves from me. We work really closely together. In circus, we are so physical, and it's not an exaggeration when I say that we feed on each other. It happens. And so people, I noticed them very scared to work with me. And so I noticed through this process of working with these students over a few years in circus school that by my final performance, I was spinning about 5 or 6 meters in the air off my neck, because why not? That I had a cut on my arm and it sprayed blood all over the studio that we were rehearsing in. And when I mean all over, it was everywhere. And the same students that were scared of working with me that distanced themselves in my first year, without hesitation, they came, they patched me up, they got me in a shower and got my blood off me, and they were helping me to clean the space up. And I felt something incredibly powerful in that moment, that I realized that going through a journey of my own learning alongside people that also had no idea meant that I'd accidentally created a cohort of allies and a support system within these performers that were training that were very young. They were 19, 20, 21, and would never have come into contact potentially with an HIV narrative. And it was wonderful and accidental. And I reflected on that a lot. I went down a route of doing a lot of activism for things like Sarah Tickens Trust and different campaigns for GMFA over the years. And I've never had an opportunity before to bring my circus experience and my HIV activism together. And so that's what I'm doing now with this new show, Tell Me. And I'm really happy to just share a little bit of that journey with you, because that's where it started. That's why it matters to me. Mm. Is I want to be able to make something for people that maybe don't think that they have anything to do with this story. Maybe it's nothing they would even think about before. And it's really, for me, it's about stepping past the point of, I love It's a Sin, I love Pose, I love all of the really powerful and poignant and historical narratives that we have and that we need. And we need those incredibly so. And I need to see where we're at now, because often I don't see that within other work. And I'm really looking with this show to take us into the present day of where we're at and what does the potential future look like for living with HIV. Mm.
That, and I know it was a very difficult moment, because obviously you'd hurt yourself, but I teared up, because what a wonderful moment for you to prove that people can be loving and think this person needs our help. And the fact that you were HIV that went out the window because there was another human being that needed help.
Absolutely. And I still remember the people that came closer to me in those early days. One of them is still an incredibly close friend, and one I haven't had contact with for years. But I remember her and her small actions so strongly. Like, the power we can have on people when we support them from a place of non-ignorance, because they knew, they felt safe. They knew more than I did. But I still remember them, so the impact they've had on my self-acceptance, my ability to be able to stick my head up above that parapet. And I have no shame. I have no shame when it comes to my HIV diagnosis. And often I think that is part of why I've maybe faced personally a lot less stigma than some of my peers, is because I just don't leave any room for it.
Right. Now, you've got something very special coming up. And that is to help with education and also, but entertaining while you're educating, Sadiq. Tell us a little bit about what we got coming up.
Yeah, definitely. Tell Me is a circus show which gives me my first opportunity to work the narrative into a performance My debut show before this was a show called The Chosen Haram, and it was a show about a gay Muslim and his experience coming out, dealing with sexuality and the underground party scene of London or other kind of queer capital cities. And I took it to Edinburgh Fringe, my hometown, and it did wonderfully well. We were selling out one of the main hall spaces at Summer Hall, where I'm actually back right now making this. And so the debut show I made traveled the whole world, from Sydney and Auckland to Malta and Europe. And we performed in about over 8 different countries with a story that was intrinsically queer, about queerness and faith and sexuality. And it really pushed me to realize that, where is my position within circus? What can I say? What is my role here? And it's applying my life experience as an initiation point to connect with people, whether they be queer audiences or not, with queer narratives, as I say, nonverbal, physical theatre, dance and circus to do so. And I think it's quite unique what we're making here. And so this show, Tell Me, does that, but it puts a journey of an HIV diagnosis on a female lead. And the reason I've chosen that is that I want to present a character's journey that isn't the expected gay man's. And what we do is we, through her diagnosis, we reflect on the past. So there's a little bit of crafty time travel. So we can all go party in a 1982-83 scenario before we had access to medication, before we had access to that treatment. But when gay sexual liberation was still fresh, still new, and go into the discussions in the room in the creative process about what that must be like to finally have some liberation, and at the same time you've got this newfound freedom, a pandemic, an epidemic starts to take your brothers or your sisters away from you. And then that's how she reflects on her own stigmas, by almost judging that past, to then have a conversation with that past for her to be able to overcome it, to find the acceptance with a partner, her partner, within the present day. And it's quite a big journey to do without words, but we're finding the dance, we're finding the scenes, we're finding beautiful ways to abstract the idea of the emotional journey we go through after diagnosis, both present and past. And it's fun in terms of the choreography, the clubs, the music we're going from, because we can't do an 80s scene without touching on things like Sylvester or Freddie, which we've just got a little touch in there, just a little one, because it's still a piece of contemporary work. We've also got some classical music, because I'm really interested in looking at the 80s through a different lens, rather than always using 80s music. What if we use classical music to present something historical, but in a contemporary way? And then how do we work with sound to put that into the modern day? But really, in the midst of making it, we're in week 3 at the moment. We've got 6 weeks of creation, and then we'll premiere it in January, and we'll do the plays in London, we'll do Worthing, we'll do Edinburgh for Manipulate Festival, and we will do dagga 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 da. I am missing one venue off the top of my head, but it will come back.
Right, so give us a bit of a rundown where people can actually book tickets from, and the dates of when you start.
Sure, so the show will go out at this, like I say, in the middle of January, and we'll do Worthing Theatres, so on their website. In London, we'll do the Mime Festival, which is like the London International Mime Festival, which is huge for a show like this. And that's at The Place in London. And we'll do Edinburgh Manipulate Festival as well. And that is a wonderful physical theatre contemporary arts festival in Edinburgh. It'll go to bed for a little bit after that. Sorry, I missed one. The Lowry in Salford. So if you're a Manchester person, Manchester queer, we're up there too. And it'll go to bed for a little bit of that. And by bed, I mean those first shows will be an opportunity for us to connect with the audience, to connect with you, to get some feedback, to see what works, and then let that kind of germinate and be able to rehearse. And we'll take it to Edinburgh Fringe for the full month of August, hopefully, if we get the funding, which I'm hopeful for. We're about to launch a Kickstarter on World AIDS Day to try and raise that extra few thousand that it's going to take to make it, because making art is expensive, yeah. Even with government funding. But I feel like it's a really important piece of work. It's a really high quality piece of work. Some of the team we've got in here are incredible. And from our past success through support of crowdfunding and through Arts Council and through Creative Scotland, we're on a really, really good direction to kind of emulate that success, but with a much bigger production. I'm looking into the room where the guys are installing it and seeing them hauling bars up the stairs just now. So I'm quite glad I'm with you.
Wow. Wow. That's some venue, the Lowry, isn't it? It's quite a lovely area around Salford.
Indeed. I did my first show at the Lowry. I've done Stuntman at the Lowry, and now they're having us back. The Lowry is one of our co-commissioners, actually. So Steve Cowan at the Lowry has given quite a substantial contribution to make this show happen. And we're in one of the spaces, like 400 or 500 seaters. So it's not a small boy at all. It's lovely. The space is beautiful. The tech in there is going to look amazing. It's going to be so nice. Very scary because I'm just in the making of it. So thinking about the actual shows is terrifying, but also exciting.
I can imagine, Sadiq. I can imagine. Sadiq Ali, thank you for joining us on Shout Out. It's been a pleasure to have you back, and I'm sure we'll have you back in the new year at some point.
Thank you, Steffi. I hope you can make it to one of the shows.
Oh, that would be lush. Yeah.
We'll get in touch. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Sadiq. You take care, my darling.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
That's a really weird bit, that song.
Yeah, so talk me through your choices when you were looking for the...
Well, I didn't want to Whamageddon everyone. So, I had last Christmas. And then what made it worse was I was at Marks and Spencer's yesterday and I got Whamageddon.
Oh, well.
Like, oh, well, never mind. So, but that's the Wickfield who did Saturday Night.
She did.
So we like Saturday Night.
I love Saturday Night. It's a classic. It's a great tune. I'm just not quite sure about that one.
Yeah, she's not so well known for that one.
Well, we tried talking as much as possible, but could still hear it over the chat.
Obviously, weren't loud enough. That's not like you.
I serenaded Steph to Last Christmas.
I thought you serenaded Tara, not me. Well, you were looking into Tara's
threw
eyes.
It in my face when I sang to you and
that
made
was
a smart
nice.
Comment.
I didn't throw anything. I just said, in your head, do you think you sang like George Michael?
I just don't know where to go question. With that. I just don't know where to go with that.
I don't tend to hear the artist in my head when I'm singing, I have to admit. What happens in my brain when I'm singing.
I was just channeling Woolly Jumpers.
We don't really want to know what happens.
You were just channeling Christmas.
Yeah, I was Woolly Jumpers, Roaring Fire, Ski Lifts, whatever else happened in that video. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's quite well remembered, yeah. Thank you
very much.
It was done on quite a budget from... what I'm aware of.
I'm not up on my Wham history knowledge, but...
No, yeah. There was... Well, was it when he passed away, there was a whole documentary on it, and
it
I remember seeing
good.
It.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, he wrote that in no time at all, and that was just his friends, and they were going on holiday or something, and they just filmed it. And of course, it's become iconic.
Do you remember
since.
We actually interviewed his manager? Remember? And, yeah, and he told us all about the behind-the-scenes stuff. Yeah. Quite interesting, yeah. Well, it's in our archive somewhere. What do you mean, is it broadcast? It went out. I don't know where you put it now, in one of your drawers, I guess.
So I've got most of the archive. We did lose a few with a hard drive failure many, many, many years ago. But most of them I've got. I've still got the original first one as well.
Yes. Actually, we played that out.
15 years ago, believe it or not.
We played it out, didn't we?
Fresh face down.
I had hair. How many years ago was it you started with this?
About 11, I think.
Yeah.
I used to do the traffic on Steffi's Drive Time show. That's how we got started.
Was that on BCFM or was that over
it was here?
It was Handbags and High Heels.
Handbags,
yeah.
Yeah.
Getting Bristol home and, You were cracking. I knew you've got a voice for radio, you have.
My friend said, oh, my friend Steffi does an EDM drive time show. And I was like, okay, I've got to hear this. and then that was it.
And then you were part of it.
Yeah, and then she was like, right, you can do the traffic, read that out, don't get it wrong. I was like, okay. But the fact that it was EDM focused, I was like, really? Is this what people need? And you were like, yes, absolutely, more techno. So, yeah, it was...
In Steffi's head, she dances like that, too.
It was good, yeah.
She drives like that.
She does drive like that.
Wow. True. Wow, I'm mortified. Whether that's the truth or not, dear listener.
Ez, let us know on a text.
She's still alive after going up over the Alps and
back. Well, she's not here. We don't know for sure that she's still alive, do we?
Well, I'll get her to phone in.
She doesn't drive, she doesn't know any better.
No, she's a passenger princess, yeah, is our Ez. Yeah.
What's the capital of Paris? I asked her that once. It completely stumped her. She's like, right. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's quite confusing. It took me a while to get my head around that. Sorry. So, I'd revisited George in my head.
So. George, you were singing
my
me,
boy. So. Yeah, yeah.
Well, should we get some factual stuff?
Yep.
Okay.
Good evening, this is Shoutout Radio with your weekly news roundup. Tonight we remember cultural icons, celebrity, queer visibility in mainstream media, examine a landmark tribunal ruling and report a new alliance standing against far-right extremism. We also reflect on those developments mean for our own communities and what we face as an uncertain future.
Martin Parr obituary. Acclaimed documentary photographer Martin Parr has died at the age of 73. Parr passed away peacefully at his home in Bristol on Saturday, according to the Martin Parr Foundation. Parr rose to prominence in the 1980s with his seminal series and Last Resort, capturing working-class holidaymakers in New Brighton with saturated colour and sharp social observation. His connection to Bristol remains strong. A current exhibition at Bristol Museum showcases his photographs of the city's Pride Festival. Parr himself described Pride as one of the best days for shooting in the Bristol calendar, reflecting the joy and resilience of the LGBTQ+ communities. At a time when the far-right groups continue to target Pride events, Parr's work stands as a reminder of the power of visibility and celebration.
Comedian and television president... personality, Alan Carr, will join Virgin Radio holiday programme with a special 3-hour broadcast on December the 20th. The show will be presenting from the top of the tower, adding a distinctive backdrop to the seasonal celebration. Carr, widely celebrated within the LGBTQIA community, is part of the festive lineup that also includes Anna Matronic and Sisters curating a dance set for the New Year's Eve. Virgin Radio inclusive programming highlights how mainstream platforms are embracing queer voices, a cultural pushback against exclusionary narratives. Listeners across the UK can tune in via digital DAB radio, with international audience can also join in line.
NHS 5 tribunal case. Turning to legal news, a cisgender nurse has lost the majority of her claims in an employment tribunal case against NHS 5 and a transgender doctor, Dr. Beth Upton. The nurse, Sandy Peggy, was suspended after allegedly bullying Dr. Upton, with whom she had been asked to share a changing facility. Judge Kemp ruled that the nurse had been harassed by the health board on 4 procedural points. Failures on how the complaint was handled, but dismissed all claims against Dr. Upton personally. Anti-trans campaigners such as Maya Forrester expressed outrage, calling the ruling a disappointment. The tribunal, however, made clear that both gender-critical beliefs and the protected characteristic of gender reassignment must be respected and balanced. Importantly, the tribunal rejected arguments that trans women are automatically excluded from single-sex bases. It emphasised that rights must be weighed case by case and that employers cannot lawfully exclude trans people without proportionate justification. Discrimination lawyer Robin Moira White noted the judgment shows both trans people and gender critical people have rights in the workplace and employers have to balance those. It is worth noting that Sandy Peggy and the well-funded anti-trans organisation supporting her have not given up. They have signalled their intention to continue challenging NHS Fife and the relevant members of staff. This persistence underscores the wider strategy of anti-trans groups to keep testing the boundaries of equality law, even when rulings reaffirm protections. And here's the wider lesson. Judges in this case showed backbone, delivering a balanced and fair judgment that upheld trans rights without dismissing other protected beliefs. If our political elites and media followed that example, we might see less division and more fairness in public life. As a community, we must also consider how these rulings and campaigns impact our organisations and places of socialisation. The Anti-Trans Brigade is well-funded and determined, and they will continue to challenge the inclusive policies wherever they can. That means we all have to be ready to defend our spaces, our colleagues, and our rights.
Anti-Far Right Coalition. Finally, a wide-ranging alliance of over 50 organisations have united to oppose a growth far-right politics in Britain. Reported by the Socialist Worker, the coalition spans radical left groups, faith communities, major trade unions, environmental campaigners and community activists. Among the participants are Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Friends of Al-Qaeda and Muslim Council of Britain, Friends of the Earth and Abortion Rights. The initiative has also attracted cultural support. Musicians, Paloma Faith, Charlotte Church, Ice Bands, Kneecap and Fontaines DC, comedians Larry Henry, Asim Chaudhry and actors Juliet Stevenson and Christopher Eccleston are listed as backers. Former Little Mix member Leanne Pinnock endorsed the effort, saying, "I'm standing with together to call out the far-right extremists and racists for what they are, dangerous and divisive. We have to protect our communities, defend our freedoms and stand up to hate together." The coalition highlights the breadth and opposition to far-right extremism, uniting voices across civil rights, climate action and cultural life. It ends a clear message: communities will not be divided by hate.
That's all for this week's Shout Out Radio News. From cultural remembrance to legal rulings and grassroots activism, the stories remind us that visibility, inclusion and solidarity are powerful tools against far-right extremism. As we move into an uncertain world, our communities must be prepared to defend our organisations and social spaces from the anti-trans brigade and wider far-right hostility. The courts have shown fairness. Now it's time for political leaders, media and all of us to show some backbone. Stay tuned for more Shout Out programming and remember, standing together is how we resist division. There's much more news on Shout Out website, shoutoutradio.lgbt. Be sure to stay tuned to community media throughout the week for stories of interest and relevance to you. For Shout Out News, this has been Steffi Barnett
and Tara Fraser.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you. For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Now, you can't knock Idina Menzel.
No, that's good. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't knocking Wigfield.
You just didn't remember it.
I think we were, Lucy.
No, like, Wigfield has got a place Saturday night. It is iconic. It is a banger.
Wigfield has a place, but it's not on a Thursday after 8 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm not sure she has range, is what I'm saying. You know,
not like your voice, which has range.
And Adina as well has range, so I'm just saying.
She certainly has.
She is a ledge, and, you know, so, yeah, good for her.
Famous for Wicked.
Amongst many other things,
Broadway legend. Yeah. Now, talking of being really famous, the event's already happened. You're going to introduce our guest for us?
Not content with taking over the world of Bristol stand-up open mic Flinter comedy, Vicky Lane is back to talk about the next entertainment and group participatory confessional medium that she's...
that makes it sound so dodgy, thanks.
I've really set you up now, haven't I? Yep. So,
Remind us, how long have you been in Bristol so far?
Since September.
Fine, yeah. So it's about the right time to launch your second event in the city. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
So what have you got for us? What have you got for us this time?
This time I've got Queer Stories, which is a queer open mic spoken word event this time. It's explicitly not stand-up. There will be no stand-up sets.
So and if you anybody, can't do a funny story then?
You can do a funny story, which is a different thing to a stand-up set. If anybody comes on and tries to do stand-up, I'm going to get the big comedy hook and pull them off stage.
Oh, is that a thing that you're going to have there?
No. Okay. Metaphor. But you wanted me to say yes.
Maybe a water pistol or something like that. Yeah. No. Shoo, shoo, shoo.
Just okay. To make it clear, it's something different. And it's one of my pet passions and a kind of little baby of mine that I want to bring to Bristol. So.
Oh, fantastic. So where have you, what inspired the night and what is it about queer storytelling that you want to get going in this space?
Yeah, sure. So this night's actually, I wasn't the one that originally started it. It's been running for about 25 years in different forms in Berlin.
Oh, right.
There's an amazing secondhand bookshop there, English language bookshop called Another Country, that was set up by a trans woman called Sophie, who moved to the city in the late 90s, basically to kind of experience the Berlin life. She opened this bookshop and then she started running this storytelling night and spoken word night. And I think in the original form, it was like her and her mates hashing over what they'd got up to on the Berlin scene for the previous month.
Okay, so some good stories then.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then as it's evolved over the years, it's had different hosts and different iterations. And I went along to tell a story and they didn't have a regular host. So I pestered Kiki, the manager of the bookstore, and said, can I be the host? And I hosted that for 3 years. So.
Amazing.
Is it still going over there?
It is. I handed it on to my friend Max and they've taken it over to put their stamp on it.
Oh, amazing.
But yeah, so for
now
me...
Now you're splintering off.
Exactly. And so, I just loved it so much that I just don't want to give up doing it. I want to bring it to Bristol.
Amazing. So, talk us through the night. Talk us through how it's going to work and where it's being held and what people can expect.
Yeah, sure. So, we're going to be at Sydney and Eden on Gloucester Road. It's going to be the first Wednesday of the month, and so the first one will be on the. I wrote this down somewhere. What's the first Wednesday in September? The first Wednesday in January.
January.
Yeah.
Is it the?
I believe it's the 7th.
Yes,
maybe.
Yes. I've got a feeling. I've got a feeling about 7th.
Just as a side note, I just brought up the calendar on the computer here in BCFM. And it's in Chinese.
Yeah, it is, and I can read Chinese. And Wednesday, the first Wednesday, is the 7th.
Yep. Yes, brilliant. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So our first one's then. Doors at 7:30 for an 8 o'clock start. It is completely open mic, and that means that I don't book people in advance for this one. And really, ooh, the audience and the people that
winging
turn
it
up,
kind of thing.
Yeah, well, they make the night, and that is, it's for them, right? So people can come along and just tell a coming out story, or people have told. We've had like mini lectures on forgotten queer historical figures. People have read poems, love poems. People have told stories about their family. And what's nice about it is one of the things that people say is like, well, am I queer enough? Is this a queer story? It's not about like being queer in particular. And I always say, if you identify as LGBTQIA in some way and a thing has happened to you, that is by definition a queer story. So just come talk about it.
Do they write them down? Or do you just have to come and like do it off the top of your head, don't think?
People do it in different ways. It works best if people are spontaneous and kind of talk and maybe have some notes with them. That's kind of tends to be more engaging for the audience. But I have also had people that have like written a short story and read the first part of a short story out, or have read out, you know, just to be able to get it. I think the most important thing for me is that people get out what they want to say, however they want to do that. And I set up the audience to hold the space so that people can feel comfortable and safe to do it. Yeah.
So you said it's not a stand-up night, but you seem to be, and that's, yeah, you don't want people coming and doing their open mic acts, but it seems like your definition of story is very, very inclusive and welcoming to whatever people feel like expressing. Is that it, or are there any hard limits? Musical instruments, are they in scope? If I brought my kazoo, would that, you know?
It's definitely spoken word.
Okay. So no singing. Yeah. Right, okay. I can't do my George
Christmas
Michael
show. No. That she's going to bring her kazoo.
Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, okay. Vicky, keep talking.
Are you going to kazoo a George Michael track?
I'm queer. Yeah. I've got a story about serenading my gorgeous friend who threw it back in my face. Yeah, no, please, sorry.
Please do it and come talk about it. I suspect the first one will be a lot of like how, you know, did you have a stressful Christmas? Come get it off your chest.
Okay. Right? Okay, 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 okay.
Or did you have a good Christmas with your found family or something like that? So,
did you see Sparkler somewhere? Rather interesting.
Okay, yeah, yeah. We saw an interesting act at the Spiegelton yesterday that involved a Sparkler. Sorry, I don't want to divert what you were talking about.
No, no, no. Like, this is...
Tell a story about the act, but
right.
Yeah.
But this is what I mean. Like the second you think about it, so much has happened and so much that you've seen that is worth sharing. And it can range from kind of the silly and the funny, the explicit to, you know, the what can be quite like heartbreaking in some ways we've had. And quite often stories are both simultaneously. And this is why I say it's not stand up, right? There's no pressure to entertain and be funny in that way, because I think this is about entertaining is maybe the wrong word, but like engaging with each other and each other's stories in a broader way.
So that's interesting. You talk about engagement there, and you did talk about how setting up the audience to be able to receive and engage and like hold space for that story. So do you encourage dialogue? Is that something that's encouraged, or how do the... Because listening is a very active act. Mm-hmm. So how can the audience be present for that kind of storytelling experience?
Yeah, I always do a thing at the start where I read out the community guidelines and say, as long as people are adhering to these guidelines, they can say whatever they like on stage and I won't stop them. And then what I say to the audience is, as part of that, there may be stuff that you don't feel able to listen to at the moment. That's no problem. You go out of the room for a little bit and we'll shout you and bring you back in when the story's over. And I also make a point of getting, it's something that we used to do in improv. When I do improv comedy, we stand backstage and we hug each other before we go on and we say, I've got your back. And so before anybody goes on stage, I get the whole audience to give we all say it together. We say, we've got your back as a group, for each and every person that's about to get up and share something. And that, I think, really helps. And then if anybody in the audience doesn't feel able to do that, there's no shame on them. They can just, you know, take a little break, take a breather, come back. And people on stage know that the room's going to hold the space for them, whatever they need to talk about or want to talk about.
Do people get to ask questions?
We tend to kind of try and keep it without interruption, because for some people it's a huge deal, right, to stand up in front of a room of peers and
But you often want to go, what happens next?
Yeah, so but we make sure we have intervals, and really then turns into a social after the bar. You know, heard something in a story that you want to pick up on, you can go and... Because the audience are the performers are the audience. Yeah. So afterwards there's plenty of time to have a drink and chat and, you know, make those connections after the performance, if you like.
Have you ever had any feedback from somebody who's maybe gone and told a story on the impact that being able to get up and say those things has had on them and how that's made them feel?
Yeah, I think because I also used to run then storytelling workshops from it as well. So people would maybe get up the first time, stumble a bit and fumble and want to get better or be too nervous to do it. But I think the biggest thing that people get is this kind of like sense of confidence. And I think so many of us, like, it gives people a chance to take control of their own narrative, right? And process things. And I think to be serious for a moment, like there's something about like getting rid of things like shame and stigma and all those anxieties that you can carry around. Mm. Once it's shared and held in a space and you realize and you listen to other people and go, oh, well, they've had a really similar experience. Mm. Or, you know, I'm not alone in having done this. And people in the audience appreciate the bravery of somebody sharing it and will go up to them. And just by having those simple conversations, you get this immediate kind of boost, really, or validation, or being seen and heard in the space. So for me, that's the biggest thing, and that's what people get from it as well.
It seems like an incredibly affirming event, especially as you hear more and more people struggling to make connections and struggling to meaningfully engage with with people. I was talking with a friend who I've been friends with for 20 years, and I did say to them, if I just called you out of the blue, would you answer? And this is somebody who I've known for 20 years, and they'd be like, no, absolutely not. Well, actually, I'd only think you were calling me if there was something very, very wrong, as in, you know, we chat on text all the time, but the expectation of calling people seems to have fallen away. And
it's nowhere near as big as it used to be now.
Yeah, it just seems to be that this seems to be a really good way for people to maybe relearn that art of engagement.
Yeah, and there's something quite raw about it as well. You know what I mean? Like, this is like, it's very deliberately, I mean, there are other different types of storytelling nights and spoken word nights that might be competitive or about like putting on a good show or a performance. Mm. And this isn't, this is just a lot of people being present for each other in a room to listen and hear like somebody's unique perspective on something and go, oh, well, that's different from mine, but actually there's a commonality. And I don't even do themes because themes kind of start emerging over the course of the night as people's ideas are triggered and memories, and people might like not want to go up to speak at the start, but then they come to the interval and they'll be like, oh, I heard somebody else say something. I want to have a go at that. So yeah, it really does feed into itself. And that's why I say like the audience make it, if you like.
Sounds very powerful. Yeah. On a slightly sillier note, what's your favourite storytelling what's your favorite storytelling trope or theme, or you know, you, when people get up and tell like, I mean, so a classic one in the queer world is their coming out story or something like that. Have you got any favorite themes or ideas or things that you love it when people come to? And then conversely, which ones do you think, oh, that's done to death, if you want to say? Maybe start with your favourites and then we'll decide how.
I suppose the things that stick in my mind are like, it's not even tropes, it's just people taking a chance and taking a risk. If I've had somebody in my storytelling workshop, for example, who spent 3 weeks like not really being able to share with like a small room full of people, and we get them to get on stage and just speak for 5 minutes about themselves and something that happened to them and get that affirmation and see how proud they feel of themselves afterwards, to me that's like really incredible. And conversely, the only thing that I think sometimes doesn't work as well is when people read something out. And again, it's about that engagement, because when you're like, if you're trying to read a story that you've written, your head tends to be down, you're not making that eye contact, it's not interacting with an audience, if you like, and that's
very different.
As much.
Yeah,
I would still never stop somebody doing it, but I think attention spans and engagement can slip a little bit with that. Yeah.
So that's first Wednesday, we said?
First Wednesday of the month it's going to be, yeah.
Okay, at Sydney at Eden, which is a lovely, lovely venue. Mm. So, you know.
Do you need a ticket to go? Can you just turn up?
Well, you can just turn up. It's on head first. So if you want some more details and things about how to get in touch with me, if you've got any questions about, you know, you're not sure whether you want to get up on stage, what it's going to be like, anything like that. So you can get in touch with me at vicky.whatsthestory on Instagram, and you can look up more information on head first for a ticket link.
Yeah, we'll be sure to post your socials on our socials after this so that we can do that.
Are you bringing the comedy night back? When's that coming back around again?
Well, yeah, Lucy's been to the first two.
I have, yeah. No, they're great.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed them.
Really,
yeah.
Yeah, we had a great turnout for the first one. I think everybody was Christmas shopping for the second one. but we are going to be the first Sunday of the month, and I've deliberately managed to organise it so that it's not going to clash with any other queer open mics or events Sunday evenings, I know.
No, there really are, but which is great. It's a great position to be in, but yeah.
Yeah, so we've got a fantastic range of acts signing up, and they're loving the night. The audience has been lovely so far, and it's been really good fun.
Amazing. Cool.
Well, I'm sure we'll speak to you before that anyway, won't we? And you'll have to come and tell us all about that one when it's coming back round again.
Well, I think that one's
that'll be on
very early in January.
That'll be the first Saturday.
That's literally the first one, is it?
First Sunday of January. That'll be the 4th of January.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm booking it. I'm booking it on Monday. So
right.
Amazing. Cool. Well, you heard it here first.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks very much for coming and talking to us. It sounds like an amazing event. It sounds really, really am I being a bit over the top when I say it sounds very quite spiritual and powerful? Is that too hyperbolic?
It sounds like therapy.
It's been variously described as group therapy. Somebody said it's like the biggest warm comfort blanket of a night that they go to.
That sounds awesome. Thank you very much for talking to us about it, Vicky.
Thank you.
Stay with us. You're listening to Shout Out. Back in a minute.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Don't say a thing.
Well, I like that.
I like that. Lucy doesn't.
Maybe look at Tara's face as well.
Is that from a show?
That was from Glee.
What? Okay, well, still. Okay, all right.
It's sugary Christmas sweet.
It's
almost
very saccharine. Yeah.
Sugary sweet.
Definitely.
So okay. I don't normally play Christmas songs.
Well, no, because normally it's not Christmas. So, you know, most of the year you can't actually play Christmas songs.
I don't normally play them this early before the Christmas shows.
Okay.
I usually only do it for like the actual show. But then you're like, well, actually, most of December people are celebrating. Everywhere you go, they're playing.
Yeah.
And besides which, Steph started it in November.
She
got fired for it.
That's true. That is actually true.
Oh, yeah. I keep getting fired. That's an outro jingle in both of my shows.
We're already on to our...
if they don't sack me, I'll be back.
We're already on to our third tin of Quality Street in our house. Yeah.
But they're smaller than they used to be. They're far shallower.
Hence why we're on our third tin, of course. Yes. The Christmas food arriving is just an excuse to just eat
Christmas
food.
Chocolate's got really expensive, isn't it?
Well, there's cheese, though, so it's okay.
Oh, yes. I like cheese.
Yeah.
Carl likes mince pies. I'm amazed, actually, we haven't bought more this year. Last year, we went through about six packs.
Wow. Do you sample various varieties, or are you just do you commit to one?
And you think he walks past?
Right, okay. He's mince pie agnostic. Good to know. Right, okay.
Well, I think if you bought him an expensive one, he'd appreciate it.
He'll also just eat any old.
I quite like them puff pastry rather than sugar.
Yeah, it's quite nice.
I don't like any form
with
of mice pie.
With some cream on top or None. Custard.
You don't like mince pie? Mm-hmm.
They're Satan's food.
Wow.
I like shortbread.
Sit on the fence there, Steffi.
Well, then you don't like haggis either, so well.
Oh, don't
say that. I think that's just damn cruel.
Okay.
So, no, I like shortbread. That's my favourite one.
Shortbread, broken up, and sliced banana, and custard.
For Christmas? Okay.
Anytime.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, anytime.
I'm not prejudiced over... I'll eat anything at any time of year.
Okay. I remember my granddad used to love Turkish Delight, mm-hmm. and they came in rose and lemon.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Don't like that.
Don't you?
Steffi has spoken.
Steffi has fun at Christmas, doesn't it?
I remember when I was a kid, we used to have packs of figs, is it?
Yeah. Figs.
Yeah. That was always a good thing.
With a plastic fork in it.
Yep.
Anyway, that's it for this week. If you want to hear this show or any previous ones, they're all available as podcasts on all good podcast providers, as well as on our brand new website.
And to listen again to or download them, head to our website, shoutoutradio.lgbt.
I have no idea what we're doing next week, so I just wrote we'll see you next week. So we'll
see you next week.
Bye.
Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT Radio for you.